Recording has started.
Thank you. Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening. Welcome to the new GPLD Subsequent Procedures Working Group call held on Monday, the 8th of October, 2018. In the interest of time, there will be no roll call. Attendance will be taken by the Adobe Connect room. If you are only on the audio bridge, could you please let yourselves be known now? Thank you. Hearing no names, I would like to remind all participants to please state your name before speaking for transcription purposes, and to please keep your phones and microphones on mute when not speaking to avoid any background noise. With this, I will turn it over to Jeff Newman and Cheryl Langenor. Please begin.
Hi, Jeff Newman. Sorry. I just got myself off mute. Welcome, everyone, to this call. And I know that we have, or I see that we have a little bit lighter attendance than normal, as it just came to my attention, or I just noticed the conflict between ICANN's session on a GDPR update and this one, which obviously does not make me too happy since this has been on the calendar for a while. So I will certainly try to have a word with ICANN that... just as they expect us to check their schedule when we schedule our meetings, it would be nice for them to check our schedule to make sure that they don't do these conflicting calls. So I will take that upon myself as an action item, but we're going to continue with our work as we have previously planned to do. So the schedule is up on the right-hand side. So it's really just to essentially review the supplemental report. We'll address a couple of the emails that have come in, and then we'll talk about ICANN 63 and then see if there's any other business. So with that said, any questions on the agenda? Okay, not seeing any questions on the agenda, and then I will ask if there's been any changes to any statements of interest. Okay, not seeing any hands or any statements in the chat. Just a reminder, if you do have any updates to your statement of interest, please do submit in writing. As well as announcing it on the call that takes place afterwards or the next meeting. Okay, so let's get right into it. A revised version of the supplemental initial report has been sent around and should be the same one that's posted in Adobe Connect at this point. If I can ask staff to thank you, never mind. I see it's been unlocked right before I asked. So that's good. This version, unlike the previous versions, if I'm not mistaken, should be a just indicating the changes to the previous version. Previous to this, every week we sent around a cumulative version of Redlines to see all the changes that have been made since we first submitted first sent around the draft a month or so ago. This one only has the changes since the last call, and Steve Chan is confirming that. So what you will see in the first section, Jim, I see you have your hand raised, so let's go to Jim, please.
Yeah, thanks, Jeff. Jim Prenner, yes. Just, I sent around some, as you requested, I sent around some language regarding the section on registrar support for registry, the final section. To me, it doesn't appear as though that was worked into this version. I just want to confirm if that's accurate or not. Thanks.
Yeah, thanks, Jim. I am taking a look here. Let me just check out something really quick. Just scroll down a little bit. I'm Steve, do you want to? I don't see anything in there. I don't remember seeing an email. So, yeah, I was just trying to double check my email archives to make sure I didn't miss anything. Jim, I don't think I got anything from you.
Maybe I screwed it up. Let me take a look. Yes. Oh, that's weird. Okay. It looks like it didn't go around. My bad. I must have screwed up my email. So I'll take a look real quick.
Okay. And if you could please, send that around. All right. That would be great. And if we made the mistake, let us know. But I'm not...
It's probably operator error on this end.
Okay. Thanks, Jim. We've all been there. Okay, so let's start on 1.1, and then as Jim's checking his notes, that's not until 1.5 anyway. So we can get back to Jim's points at that when we get there. But on 1.1, what you will see is the big change there is in Section D. And what I wanted to do with that part is there was a lot of discussion in the actual deliberation section that pointed out different mechanisms other than, one, different types of auctions that were discussed and then different alternatives to auction. So rather than just having it all kind of buried in the deliberation section, I thought it would be easier for the group, or we thought it would be easier for the group to put it in the option section that we're considering, and then put it in the form of questions. So, you know, there were questions already that dealt with some of the alternatives, but like I said, I wanted to move up the discussion of the different mechanisms into Section D. So the language crafted, although it all looks like it's new, really it was all taken from previous drafts, just moved up in certain cases from the deliberation section, or in some cases there may be a copying where it's in both sections. So I'm not going to read it now. Everyone should read it this week. There is nothing really new in terms of material, except for where we talk about the different types of auctions. So it's the first bullet point, page 2, under D, starts at the very bottom of page 2, and that talks about the VicRev auction model, which was discussed on the last call. And I will note that Sarah has sent a note to the group saying that she's got some additional language on those types of auctions. We'll get to deadlines, Sarah, in a second. But let me just see if anyone's got any questions on the material that's there at this point. In Section D, specifically, sorry. All right, on deadlines, so our goal, and I know we're going to discuss this, so I'm going to, assuming the deadline stays this Friday of publishing the report, I'd like all comments in by tomorrow, or the end of the day today, really, latest tomorrow, so that we can, you know, people can have a day or two to at least look at any of the subsequent changes, which we do not expect too many of them. If there are things that you'd like to comment that you'd like to make on a specific, either a new model completely or something other than changes to the draft language here, then I would ask at this point to hold off on those until the public comment period. I think part of the reason some people are asking for an extension of this or to not release this draft is because there's some new material that gets introduced every time someone new comes back to the conversation from the working group, even though we've been discussing this for several months now. So Sarah, when you say you've got comments to make, is it comments on the draft language here, or is it like a whole new kind of model you're proposing? Okay, mainly related to what you said. All right, then that's great. Yeah, then please, if you can get those in as soon as possible, definitely appreciate it. Simply because we do still want to keep in with the deadline. Just looking at the comments, which I think are mostly related to Section 1.2, but let me just zoom in on this a little bit. So there was a – okay, this is on the question. So in Section E, many of the questions, it seemed to well, the comment from Christina was that they were worded in such a way as it seemed to be biased against the mechanism of last resort that was in the guidebook. And so we did work on trying to make that language a little bit more objective, but certainly please take a look at that language and see if it's met the expectations or if it still seems to be not as objective as it could be. So Section E, other than that comment and a couple of the wording changes to try to make it a little bit more objective, there really weren't too many changes to the questions. But there were some additional changes in the deliberation section, which is F on page 4 through 7. And so those changes are really just to reflect the discussions that took place last week. All right, any questions on this particular section? Okay. Moving on to 1.2. The private resolution of contention sets, including private auctions. So this one we starts on page 7. I'm sorry, is it page 7 or page 8? Hold on. Page 8, sorry about that. We changed the title so that it now is not just discussion of private auctions, but also of other forms of private resolution of contention set. We put a little bit of clarifications on the how it was implemented in the new GTLD program, which was in Section B. And then and I think some of these changes were to respond to, I think some of these changes were from Christina, some from John, and some other comments that came in. And then to delineate between private resolution versus private auctions, because they are not necessarily the same thing. The other major change that we made was to take the recommendations that we had in there under Section C and put them under options in Section D. Now, this was to reflect there were a couple of people on the last call that said that either they supported private auctions or that they thought it was too early to call it a, or too preliminary to call it a recommendation of the group, and that they seemed to be okay with moving it down to options that we're considering as opposed to necessarily a recommendation. Now, it may become a recommendation, but at this point, I think rather than try to classify it as a preliminary recommendation, it was just probably better at this point to just call these things proposals. So if you look now, there are a delineation between those that express concerns about private auctions and the concerns from others that said that, you know, even if there is a concern about private auctions, that enforcement of a no private auction rule could easily be circumvented with other forms of private resolution. And that was what we discussed from primarily initially from John Nevitt's email from a week ago, along with Alexander's response. And I think there were a couple of replies as well to those emails. So this section should now cover those options. Again, it looks like major changes here, but the reality is the first bullet point under D is taken pretty much word for word from what was in the Section C as a preliminary recommendation and moved down to D, so that's not really new text. And then the second bullet point is taken from the points that were discussed on the last call and in the emails from John and Alexander and others. The third bullet point was taken from a string of that I had started, and I just say it's from a working group member, a single working group member, this is the one kind of trying to get sort of the hybrid type proposal where there's allowing for some possible types of changes, but not private auctions, and then pointing out the drawbacks that I think others have pointed out, which are things like, I know that, I think it was Mark Trachtenberg that put an email basically saying that he wasn't comfortable that ICANN would be put in a role or in a position of approving or disapproving mechanisms of in a private resolution. So that's what the third bullet point in Section D addresses. On the top of page, I think that's 9 or 10, Jamie, please.
Yeah, thanks, Jeff. Jamie Baxter, for the record. You just mentioned something related to private resolutions and how application changes are obviously part of that. And I think what I want to draw attention to is the fact that community applications do have very strict restrictions around application changes, which obviously puts them at a disadvantage when trying to negotiate private resolutions. So if the goal here is to somehow sway away from the auction process, I think we need to create fair and equal processes for all applications, including the community applications, in order to make them viable options and give them the same level playing field during the private resolution process. So I just want to highlight that because, as I've probably noted more than enough times, there's not a lot of community application voice in this group, and I just want to make sure that everybody's thinking about that as we talk about private resolution. Thanks.
Yeah, thanks. I think that I had intended to put in a reference to the change section, which is section 1.3 or 4, I can't remember at this point of this. I think it's 1.4. 1.4. So I think, Jamie, I think your comment is, although it relates to your negotiations during a private resolution phase, I think it's more for section 1.4 on changes to the application. So let's just hold on to that thought and see where we can put that point in section 1.4 if it's not already kind of in there. So I'm just going to place a hold on that one until we get to 1.4. See, going back to the chat, and I probably missed a whole bunch. Edmund says, do we anticipate change of applied for string as a way of conflict resolution? Edmund, that's, that is discussed in this section as well as the as well as in the change section 1.4. So we do discuss that and discuss concerns or some ways we could see it being allowed and then some concerns, obviously, of not abusing that. So that is mentioned here in this last bullet point, but it's also mentioned more in section 1.4 of this paper. Okay. The deliberation section, I'm sorry, I skipped a section. Sorry about that. Section E on page 10 again, specific questions the group is seeking feedback on. There were some questions added as a result of the call and the emails last week saying that talking about the notion of deriving financial benefit. And then if you do agree that private resolution overall is potentially problematic, is there a way to prevent private resolution that allows losing applicants to receive a financial benefit? So it's basically asking about the enforceability and the whether there's there are ways to enforce such a restriction. So just going back to the chat and saying agree with Jamie, lack of consideration of special aspects of community applications. So Anne, hold on to that comment until 1.4 for changes, and then may be appropriate when you submit a comment to the supplemental initial report to make sure you point those out. John's asking to hear an argument of why private auctions are not okay, but paying other applicants to withdraw are. To me, they have to be treated the same as private auctions. And so I think, John, with your comments, I think that's what we're trying to get at, deriving financial benefit. So that's why the questions ask it in that format as opposed to just private auctions. But if there are ways to word things differently, please help us change the wording. But I think that is what we're trying to get at. Let's see, John saying draft still stuck on it. Liz is saying the question is not why private auctions aren't okay. The question is the reverse. What array of options do applicants have? Liz, I think there is, just to clarify, there are a lot of people that have commented, and I realize that not everyone's on every call and not everyone responds by email, but there's certainly been a number of discussions and a number of people that have made a specific point of not favoring private auctions as not being in the public interest. So this section is not trying to appear completely biased in that manner, but there was definitely strong feelings expressed by a number of people in this group against the use of private auctions. Christina says, I agree with John's view. I would like to hear the answer to the question he's posed. So going back to the question posed was, I'd love to hear an argument of why private auctions are not okay, but paying other applicants to withdraw are okay. And then the personal opinion of that they have to be treated equally. So I think at this point, I don't think that this group is going to provide that answer, although anyone's welcome to weigh in. I see that there's one person in the queue, but I just want to make sure that these points are all covered. So, Michael, please.
So the problem I think we're going here and what I saw on the mailing list is basically any sort of private resolution could de facto become a private auction with, you know, a little bit of wordplay. I'm starting to feel like pretty heavily that if I can't, you know, any sort of solution, any sort of going off the standard process, I guess, you know, the agreement needs to be approved by ICANN and the ICANN community to make sure that a string is being handled properly and there's not just like some backroom cartel. Now that opens a pretty ugly can of worms, but it's the only possible way I could see private resolutions and being fair and to both the community and, you know, transparent. So, you know, those that are interested know that what's going on. Oh, that was Michael speaking. Sorry, I forgot the transcription.
Thanks, Michael. Okay, going back to the chat. It's moving fairly rapidly. Let's see. The Jim says that suggested lots to talk about it in the Panama breakout. Kay, Dan says documents should not go out until the options presented by the working group have been stated in the supplemental report. Okay, so are there any options? To Anne's question, I believe this document does note all of the options and does put them in. So unless I'm misunderstanding, I don't believe there are any options here that have not been stated. I'm hearing that there are concerns about the enforceability of some of these options, which may very well be in there or be legitimate, and that'll come out during the public comment period. But I believe all the options are there. Steve, please.
Thanks, Jeff. This is Steve Chan from staff. And so I actually just wanted to note that in Section 1.2, what we've tried to do is integrate and broaden the section to, of course, not just be focused on private auctions, but private resolution overall. And so to that effect, what we've tried to do is update a number of sections and make it more broad. So in Section B, you can see that the background on how it was implemented is substantially changed. And so it does talk about private auction because that is something that many have raised, including the board. So we did want to keep that element in there. It seemed like that was an important thing to do. But at the end of that, you can see Section B, you can see where it talks about actually, that's not exactly where it is. Sorry, looking at the fly. Well, the idea was to try to integrate the private resident aspect as well. But also in Section F, it talks about it substantially. So I guess for those that are noting that it wasn't included, I guess some specifics about what would need to change to make it properly accounted for, I think that would be quite helpful. And then, actually, just because I was looking at the chat, I saw it noted that Sarah's proposal was not integrated. And I think that's true. It wasn't added as an option, and that might be a good idea. But it was integrated into Section F in the deliberations. Thanks.
Okay, thanks. Thanks, Steve. Okay, so we'll make sure that that's in there as an option and not just an F. Michael, I know you're not feeling well, and that may be why your hand is still up, but just want to ask, that's an old hand or a new hand? Okay, great. John, please.
Thanks, Jeff. John Nevitt. You keep on talking about enforcement and that there's an issue where if you ban private auctions, there could be an enforcement mechanism that people could do other, or applicants could do other private resolutions. And I think that's totally missing the point. The point that many of us have been raising is that if a private auction is just one mechanism, it's just one way to do a private resolution. It's no different than a private negotiation where two parties go back and forth with a price and one party pays the other to withdraw. A private auction is only different than that is that those bids are binding, and it's just a mechanism. So, you know, yes, people have complained about quote-unquote private auctions, but I think this draft's got to be much clearer that it's not that we want to ban private auctions and then we're worried about other ways to get around that as an enforcement mechanism. That's, to me, that's not the point. That doesn't make sense. It's, if you want to ban private resolution, we should ban private resolution. If we want to ban one applicant paying another to withdraw in any mechanism, that's what the question we should be asking, not do we want to ban private auction and look at other mechanisms for private resolution. If, you know, the 2012 round could have been totally different if the rules were, it's not an auction of last resort that ICANN's holding. ICANN just holds an auction, and then we're done. That is certainly one mechanism and one question that should be asked to the community. But to have this weird hybrid in the draft, even though some folks have complained, quote-unquote, about private auctions, they're really complaining about private resolution. And I think we have to take that into account a lot more than we have.
Yeah, thanks, John. So at the end of Section B, so on page, I think it's page 8.
I've read it. I know that it's in there. You try to get in there. We're not tackling or hitting the issue as much as we should, is my point. I saw the draft. I read it. I know there are references in there. I'll give you language if you want that I would suggest. Thanks.
Okay. Thanks, John. Yeah, language is always much more helpful. But where I do have and I'll take off my chair hat, where I do think there's a disagreement is I don't think, let me say it a different way. There are mechanisms of private resolution that this group has discussed as being potentially a beneficial way of private resolution that is not akin to providing a financial benefit necessarily to a other applicant. So, for example, the discussions between companies that may apply for the same string that can come to an agreement on different strings that they can use, assuming that those strings are not in, don't put them into another contention set, and assuming that they're related to, we'll say if they are two companies, they're somehow related to their other application. So I members of the group have indicated that there are certain forms of private resolution that they could see are different than providing financial benefit to or paying off or auctions or however you want to call it to the other applicants. And I want to make sure that this draft does reflect that viewpoint as well. I know some people are taking the view that it's a one or it's an all or nothing, but I don't think that's the view of everyone in this group. And I just want to make sure that although people feel very strongly that it's one or the other, that not all the options are presented in this draft, because I don't think that would, I think we would benefit more from having everything in here as opposed to restating it as a one or the other. And I understand that there's lots of views that people like or dislike any of these options, and that's great, and that certainly will come out in the public comment period, and then we'll have to evaluate the comments that come in. But I don't want this draft to eliminate the options that we've been discussing. So I see the queue now, which is good. Jamie, Susan, and John.
Yeah, thanks, Jeff. Jamie Baxter for the record. I'm not necessarily taking a view on any particular method for private resolution, but I feel like what I was trying to get at earlier was establishing the ground rules for private resolution, and that's why I brought up the issue of community applications having restrictions being able to change elements of their application. So I wonder if it warrants having a discussion about what would be fair ground rules for private resolution. Obviously, we understand what those are for auction, but if people have other ideas of what private resolution could look like, maybe they're based in some sort of foundation for what's fair for everybody. So anyway, just wanted to add that to the conversation. Thanks.
Thanks, Jamie. Susan.
Yeah, thanks, Jeff. It's Susan Payne. I just wanted to, I suppose, in a way, give some support for your comment about not closing off options, and particularly the closing off private resolution options. Just to refer back to the other initial report, the non-supplemental one that we've just had the comment period closing on, and I haven't read all of those comments because there are obviously very many of them, but I had a few, and there are a number of those comments suggesting various support or support in different parts of the public comment about the notion of allowing the parties to kind of resolve disputes between themselves and you know, allowing them to come to a resolution by various different means. And so we do need to be careful because, you know, in respect of all the other areas where we've been asking people their views and their opinions, there's a lot of feedback coming back that people are supportive of the notion of coming to a private resolution in some way, which not necessarily about payment of money, to be clear. So we do need to be a bit careful that we're not now implying that coming to a private resolution is some way inappropriate. I think probably in this group we are clear that what we're really talking about is profiting, you know, one party profiting by financial payment from another. But you know, there's all sorts of means of profiting which aren't necessarily directly cash. And not all of that is necessarily unacceptable. I mean, I think we do want to allow, you know, parties who are in contention with each other or in dispute over issues to be able to find a path forward.
Jeff, you may be muted.
Jeff, it looks like you're, there you go, you're muted.
Okay, thanks, Susan. I don't know if it's...
you're muted.
Yeah, I'm having issues with my Adobe Connect. If that happens again, I will... okay, that was Susan. If that happens again, then I'm going to then change the phone line. But I'm not sure if that was just Susan or that was me. If it's me, I will dial in. I think we got the crux of what Susan was saying, just to make sure that there's not a one-on-one correlation between private resolution and paying a financial benefit. Some interesting things in the chat. I will go over the discussion about looking at the feedback we've already received in a when we talk about the schedule, because they are related. Okay, so it may be me working with Gremlins. Okay, let me know if there at any point you guys cannot hear me, and then I will get a dial out. Okay, Christine says, I think we need to remember that sometimes the cure is worse than the poison. Absolutely. In looking for a way to stop a few speculators, are we just tying our hands for legitimate purposes? Yeah, Christine, that's a great point, and I think that's something that could likely come out of the comments, but I think that... We do want this draft to make sure that we are reflecting all the options that were presented. Greg, please.
Thanks, Greg Shatton, for the record. I agree with Christina and the general concerns that are being placed here. It seems that what we're really concerned about is kind of negative speculators, or what I'm thinking we might call GTLD trolls, if that's not too negative, those who are seeking to engage in private auctions in order to lose and to be paid for their right that they established by the fact of putting in an application and getting involved in a contention set. And I think there's a feeling that that's somehow dirty pool. And I kind of tend to think of that as, I tend to agree with that. I think it goes beyond speculation, which is, it's not speculating in domain names, it's really speculating in applications, which does seem a little bit like something that should be prohibited. I think that tarring private resolutions in general with that one rather specific brush is going way too far. So other than that, I don't think it's speculation to hope to get a domain, a top-level domain, and either to get it without a contention set or to prevail in a contention set. So really kind of speculating in a negative right is really, it's kind of maybe a form of arbitrage. So I think that seems to be the issue. Maybe another issue, a more, critique of capitalism sort of issue, is that the winner is by definition the highest bidder, and that may trouble some people too who see this as a public space for the public good, which it is in many ways, but at the same time it's really hard to kind of get away from capitalism in the 21st century. And I can't think of any way to do it that doesn't get us into a discussion that goes far beyond anything we should be discussing on these calls. So I think that by definition, there may be some types of negative issues with private resolutions, but I think, and putting aside the critique of capitalism for the moment, I think they are pretty narrow, and I think we need to focus on the narrow problems. Thanks.
Thanks, Greg. I just joined by phone, so hopefully my issues are not quite as bad as they were. So I'm going to assume that everyone can hear me. Is that correct? If someone just says yes in chat, that would be great. Cool. Thank you. So I think Cheryl has put in the key question that I want everyone to focus on. So obviously hearing about people's views on, private resolution or private auctions or public interest is all really, really good. But I want us to try to focus on the text here. So if in the next day or so, if you could look at the text to make sure it reflects the different options that are out there in a fairly objective manner, although recognizing that where we say some have noted that they object to auctions and some have noted that they are in favor of it, that's obviously just a reflection of how people feel. But other than that, hopefully the questions and the options are presented in a semi-objective fashion, and so if we can work on that text. Okay, just looking at the chat, I think the other changes really in the deliberation section are to make it clear that we're not just talking about private auctions. Okay, I'm hearing a buzzing. Hopefully it's not coming from me. Okay, maybe it was just me. Section G in there is the no changes. So we are now on the 1.3, the role of application comment, which I think our only changes were to address the comment that Christina made on section C on page 15, which her comment was on the paragraph in there about ICANN should be more explicit in the guidebook of how public comments are to be utilized or taken into account by the relevant evaluators, panels, et cetera, in addition to the extent that public comments are to be taken into account by the evaluators, panels, et cetera. Applicants must have an opportunity to respond to those comments. The comment was, is there a reason this isn't a question? And the response was because we had interpreted this to be more of a recommendation. So is it just that, and when we invite comments on this, we're obviously inviting comments on all the recommendations as well as the questions. So I think we just didn't create a question that just repeated what was in that section C, and it was sort of just our assumption that, assumption that we would get feedback on all of the recommendations and not need to put the recommendations in the form of a question, but I suppose we could ask a question that just says, what do you think of the recommendation in that last bullet point? But I will let, we can consider that. I don't want to put Steve Chan on the spot, but good. Steve, you are willing to speak to this because I know Steve has a very particular view on this, and he and I have discussed this a number of times. So I will let Steve explain the rationale.
Thanks, Jeff. This is Steve Chan, and I had a little trouble getting off mute there. So the rationale for not having both the recommendation and the question is it actually introduces confusion for respondents potentially about where they should respond to the either recommendation or the question. It basically makes it a little bit redundant. The principal purpose of public comment on these reports is indeed to provide response to preliminary recommendations. So it generally doesn't really need specific invitation to provide comment on that section. I think for the initial report where we did have so many recommendations, options, and questions, we specifically talked about that in the preamble to make sure that you do have like. So, just to continue, in the preamble it mentioned that respondents should, of course, feel free to provide comment to recommendations. So we can do something similar in the preamble. Of course, if the working group feels strongly that it should also have a question, we could do that. It just, from a staff perspective, it seems redundant and potentially confusing to respond to both. Thanks.
Thanks, Steve. And we're trying to find the line that was causing that buzzing. I don't think it's mine because I was muted during that. So I will note that this has been a subject of discussion, but we will make sure that the preamble, which I do believe is fairly clear on this, but we will go back and double, triple check the preamble to make sure that we are soliciting feedback on not just the not just the questions, but on the recommendations themselves. So we'll make that clearer. Okay. I believe the other changes to that section, there's a change in top of page, well, there was a comment on the top of page 17 from Christina about the Spec 13 applications. So we clarified the language. Say, per the applicant guidebook, the time period for application comment on initial evaluation is subject to extension, which was the case in 2012 where the period was extended, 45 days. There were no concerns raised on that period. Hopefully that addresses the comment. And that brings us to section 1.4, which is on the change requests and the role of change requests. So to bring up Jamie's comments now, just to make sure that we will go back and put in the point of certain changes not being allowed for communities, which made things like private resolution or other changes to the application difficult. So we'll make sure that that's covered. Other than that, there's a comment on page 20, section D, last bullet point, implementation guidance. The comment from Christina was, what if another applicant believes that the new change to string creates string confusion and wants to file a string confusion objection? Similar question for legal rights objection. If the change to string needs new evaluation, doesn't it seem fair to reopen the objection period? So in the guidance, in that paragraph, we've added some language, and the application for the new string would be subject to string-related objections, example, string confusion objections, legal rights objections, etc. I think that we did discuss that on previous calls, so So it's not like we just added this in new. We just forgot to include that language. So it's not a new proposal, but something that we just omitted accidentally. Okay, so other than those couple points, those are the only changes we made to 1.4. We're now on 1.5, and this is Jim. This is where you said you were going to send us comments. Do you want to, there are no changes that have been made to this section at this point. Are you in a position to discuss the nature of some of those changes at this point? Thanks, Jim, please.
Yep, yeah, Jeff. Jim Prenegut, I don't know, Steve, not to throw it on you, but it was operator error. I sent it to the wrong email address. But Steve, would it be easier, since you now have a copy of it, to maybe put it on the screen? Or is that too difficult? Okay, good. Yeah, what I did is I, just to give a preview, they were just added some language to the narrative, and then Jeff, per your request, developed a final question around the contention that some people have about this being a ICANN inserting itself into the marketplace where it shouldn't be. So.
Okay, do you want to just start, while Steve's pulling it up, do you want to just start talking about...
I can, but without seeing it on the screen, I think it's going to be a bit of a challenge. So in section, B.
It's being loaded now, so it shouldn't take long, Jim. It's Cheryl here.
Yeah.
Jeff, did you want to go to Anne and then come back while Jim has things loaded up?
Yeah, let's. Thanks, Cheryl. That's good. I know it's coming up, but Anne, why don't you get your comments in and then we'll come back to Jim.
Yeah, hi. It's Anne for the transcript, and I'm sorry. I wanted to go back to something on the top of page 10. Is very, very brief, which is there's a discussion at the top of page 10 in relation to applicants being able to change their string to resolve a contention set. And then it would say, and it says that it would have to be with ICANN approval. And what I was looking for there is also, a public comment period in relation to that proposed change as opposed to, just an ICANN approval.
Okay. We will come back to that. Because the draft that's now up there, I think, is an old one with Jim's changes. So we've noted that, Anne, and we can put in a question to that effect or to make a reference to that. But let's go to Jim's revision. So, Jim, your revision start on – why don't you take it from here, Jim?
Yeah. Jim Prendergast for the transcript. So starting on page 21 – just the clarification, as originally said, it's attributed the comments just to ICANN registrars, but I know there were others within the working group that felt that way, so just an edit to include the fact that it was beyond the single group. The next one is, we talked about applicants doing homework before the application process, and doing a market assessment before they even applied, and that's sort of the language here that I have trying to capture that. And then when we talked about, ICANN's role in the marketplace and what they should or should not be doing by forcing registrars to carry all TLDs or anointing a select few to be registrars of last resort, that paragraph there tries to capture sort of the essence of that. And then to your direct request, on page 23, I added a final multi-part question, which does put a lot of these concerns out to the community to gather feedback and see what they're thinking.
Okay. Thanks, Jim. So that's the question at the bullet point on E that says, does ICANN 14 registrar carry TLDs? That one?
Correct.
That's still the question? Okay, cool.
Yeah. Yeah, and apologies. Okay. I screwed up. As usual, it wasn't Steve or the rest of the team. It was Jim screwing up, sending it to the wrong email address.
Okay, thanks. Thanks, Jim, and we will take a look at that and incorporate that in there. So we'll try to submit a revised draft a little later on today with that language. I know, Steve, I'm putting you on the spot to just do that, but it would probably be easier for everyone to look at the final draft with Jim's comments in there sooner rather than later. And your hand is still raised. I'm not sure if that's still on the point you just raised on the public comment period around changing strings, or whether that's...
Yeah, sorry, Jeff. I'll put it down.
Okay, thanks. Let me see. Just checking the chat. Great. Okay, so those are the sections of the report. But I do think we should spend a few minutes talking about the timing. And Christina's just putting a placeholder that after she sees Jim's comments incorporated, you know, they may want to comment. So, all right, on the timing issue. So one of the questions that was asked was, have we reached out to the private auction providers on the just to see if they would provide us feedback? We have reached out to them. Only one of the auction providers has responded back to us, and it's the one that didn't do the bulk of them but did do a few of them. And so this provider, we're trying to work out schedules where they can give us feedback. They are pretty much focused on a proposal of what they would do, which actually is fairly similar to one of the options mentioned here in the private auctions, but haven't really been specific as to whether they could provide us with any data or feedback on the auctions that have already taken place due to confidentiality concerns. So we're not sure yet at what point or what kind of data we're going to actually be able to get from this one provider. Like I said, the other provider hasn't responded back to us yet, so I'm not sure if they will respond back or if they will provide us with any data, which takes us back to the ultimate question of that Jim had raised, which was, because we don't have this data, should we be delaying this thing until after Barcelona? And you know, we at the leadership did, you know, discuss the timing of this, and also coupled with the notion of, you know, we did get some feedback in the initial public comment period on some of these topics, and, you know, should we incorporate that in there? So just to go back a few weeks and to go back to something that we initially discussed, one of the things that we knew the leadership team knew would happen is if we extended the initial report public comment period, we knew that incorporating any of the feedback from the initial comment period into the supplemental initial report would be much more difficult, if not impossible. So if we had stayed with the initial deadline of the public comment period for the initial report, then it would have been possible to incorporate some of the feedback, or all the feedback. But because we extended the initial public comment period for nearly a month, we knew at that point that we would not be able to incorporate the feedback into the supplemental initial report. We also knew that if we extended this supplemental initial report and didn't release it until after Barcelona, that we would then be up against the end-of-the-year holidays and people going on vacation, whether it's summer in your area, and that's a shout-out to Cheryl, by the way, or whether it's winter, then we knew that we would then throw off our schedule, not just by a month but or a few weeks, but by several months. And so while I realized that it could be that it would have been nice to have been able to read all of the comments that have come in and sort of incorporate, you know, when they did mention public auctions or other things, which, by the way, we didn't ask a question on, but if they did provide those, that we could incorporate it. But because we extended the initial public comment period, that just did not become possible without really throwing off our schedule by several months, and that's not something we wanted to do. The other thing that the leadership team discussed was that, you know, part of the purpose of public comment period is to get data. And so we are going to continue reaching out, continue our discussions, hopefully have the providers of private auction services come on and talk to the group, or at least have a special session to talk to the group on their feedback. We've also made a commitment to send the initial report, supplemental initial report, to the auction providers, specifically inviting them to provide feedback on those sections. So we are doing everything we can to get that data if we could. And as Sarah said, we'd have hoped that they could provide anonymized data to eliminate confidentiality concerns, and that was certainly in the note that I sent to the that we sent to the private auction providers. We definitely mentioned that concept and have said that if they can't provide the data or if they're concerned about confidentiality, that we, you know, we would love to have anonymized data. And I guess I take it that they're considering that, but we have not heard back. We do have a call that we're trying to schedule with that one provider this week to see what data they can provide us. So while I appreciate the notion of a delay in releasing this supplemental initial report, the leadership team felt that because the data that we're going to get back at this point is so speculative, we don't even know if we're going to get data back, and because even if we got back data, that may or may not impact how people in the community feel about private resolution, and because of throwing off the schedule by a huge amount, we decided that releasing this report prior to Barcelona and then discussing it at Barcelona would still be the way that we would like to go. So, happy to hear comments on that. I know that some of the people that were on the ICANN call may have now joined us, so welcome from that call. But interested in getting some feedback on what we've been discussing, if anyone has any. So, Jim, please.
Kind of figured I had to go first. Yeah, thanks, Jeff. So, Jim Prendergast, I think everybody's had a chance to see the email I sent. Just a couple of thoughts and reactions. You know, I think today's call is indicative of how far we are from really having a handle on the auctions issue. There was a lot of stuff going back and forth in the chat. There's a lot of stuff that may be coming via email. We still don't have the research, as you mentioned, from the auction providers. In fact, I don't know what questions we're actually asking them to actually find out what data they have. Sometimes what you ask is just as important as what you get. You know, what really strikes me, though, is, you know, the feedback we did get from the previous report that we put out for public comment. I know, everybody who's been involved in those comment drafting processes know how difficult they are, how intensive they are. And I just think it would be a mistake for us, especially when we've got comments specifically on the auctions issue or private resolutions, to not address those and take those into account. And, you know, I know the IPC, the ALAC, and others have weighed in on this, but the ICANN Board of Directors weighed in on this, and they weighed in, you know, with some pretty heavy stuff. And I just think that for us to go right back out and continue to ask questions without getting clarity or further understanding and taking advantage of time with the board in Barcelona to find out what particularly they have, you know, what concerns they have, where I want to read it so I get it accurately, but how gaming for the purpose of financing other applications or with no intent to operate the TLD as stated in the application can be reconciled with ICANN's commitments and core values. I mean, you know, they don't just throw those words around willy-nilly. So I think we have to be responsive to what the community has said. As you said in the discussions that we had around the liaisons, there is a perceived or actual added weight to comments from, you know, SOs, ACs, and all the various other letters as opposed to individuals. And when we get that, I think we do need to pay attention to it. If that means an extra couple of weeks, I think that's important for the process. You know, I think taking advantage, somebody mentioned in the chat, taking advantage of being together in Barcelona to talk through these issues another time and try and hash out a little more clarity around it is important. So I think sacrificing a couple of weeks leading up to Barcelona, where frankly nobody outside of this phone call, let alone the larger mailing list, is going to pay attention to this, will probably pay a lot more dividends going forward than if we put this out right now just to hit an internal deadline. Thanks.
Okay, thanks, Jim. I'll let Alan go, and then I'll let Alan and Donna go, and then I will just provide some feedback from the leadership team, and Cheryl, of course, can weigh in. So, Alan, please. Alan, are you on mute, or can't hear you at this point?
Can you hear me?
Yes, now I can. Thank you.
I don't know what happened. I didn't touch any buttons. I'll try again. Maybe I was muted centrally. I don't know. The issues on auctions are not as high on the ALEX list as they may be on others, although the whole concept of gaming and stockpiling TLDs, I think, is an issue that's relevant to us. My overall feeling, however, though, is this is a long process we're in. You know it. We all know it. We still have a long way to go. Once we issue a final report and the board deliberates, the implementation is probably going to take years. We still have not addressed the issue, and I don't know what the sum total of the comments were on the first report on the issue of the SACS report on name collision. I know the ALAC has taken a strong position saying we have to wait for it. So overall, yes, if we delay this by a few days or a few weeks, it may delay the whole process by a couple of months, but I believe that will end up in a much better product, and I don't believe we should worry about that at this point. Thank you.
Thanks, Alan. Donna.
Thanks, Jeff. Donna Austin. So I'm just going to put my council liaison hat on for a minute if I can, please. I appreciate that people want, you know, the best product possible to come out of this process. I think that, in particular on this auction proceeds issue, we had quite a bit of discussion about it in Panama, and I think we moved on. I think we've got some good information in the supplemental report that's, you know, if we can meet that, let's publish it on Friday time deadline, I think that's probably a good thing to do. And I say that because while Alan's saying, well, you know, it doesn't really matter because it's going to take another, you know, how many years to roll out this process, even if we get to implementation. That's one view. The council is very conscious, and we had a strategic planning session at the beginning of this year, that these PDPs cannot become open-ended efforts. You know, I think once we get into 2019, this has been a three-year process already. So Jeff and Cheryl have been doing a really good job in trying to make sure that they capture everybody's view and give enough time for, you know, the extending the public comment period that they've just done, delaying the initial report to make sure that, you know, most of the content was covered and people were comfortable with how that is being done. But, you know, if I could just ask as a community that we be very respectful that these things cannot go on forever, that there has to be an end date to them. So just a reminder that once we get into 2019, this effort has been going for 3 years. And from a council perspective, we don't think that's tenable. We need, and so I guess what I'm saying is I'm supporting Jeff and Cheryl here in that we need to try to keep to the timelines that Jeff and Cheryl put up in front of the council at every meeting and say, well, this has had to slip and this has had to slip and now we're slipping back even further. We need to work together and understand that this is a job that has to be completed. It can't be open-ended. I don't, you know, how long it takes the board to finalise these, the recommendations and sign off and get to implementation is beyond what we're doing here. But for the PDP itself, if we can all acknowledge that there has to be an end date and if we could all try to work together and work with Cheryl and Jeff in what they're trying to do into getting us, you know, a good product, probably won't be perfect, but rarely can we get a perfect product. But it will be a good product. But if we can work with them in trying to meet the timelines that they've set this group, and I think that they are working, you know, they are being reasonable in the timelines they're setting. So let's all just try to be a little bit flexible in our thinking and supporting Jeff and Cheryl in what they're trying to do in meeting these milestones so that we don't get into that point that in 12 months' time we're going to say, well, we're almost 4 years into this process. Thanks.
Thanks, Donna. And Jim, I guess, has a response, and then I'll jump in. Thanks.
Yes, unless those are old hands. Just want to clarify.
I think there. Okay. Yep, Jim, you're up.
Yep, thanks. And Donna, thanks. I appreciate that. And I think, you know, we all know that the role of the council is to oversee this process and make sure that the process is properly followed. As you're well aware, this group did have a fairly, you know, healthy debate around the release of the initial report and whether or not it was truly initial report without consensus calls and without recommendations in all of the different sections that we did put out for public comment. So, you know, I appreciate that, and I certainly know this is not an open-ended process, but, you know, here we go again. I'm concerned that we are driving towards a conclusion, but we're ignoring process along the way. And I think I agree, it will not be perfect, this document, and it never will be. But I do think that we need to be mindful that when this does go to the council for review, the council needs to ensure that the proper processes were followed. And when it does pass the GNSO council, and I purposely use those terms, when it does pass the GNSO council, it then goes to the ICANN board of directors, and it's up to them to determine whether or not it's complete and accurate, and they should approve it. I sense that the process that we went through with the 2012 round did gather momentum towards the end that probably set us back over a year, if not longer, in the implementation and the execution of the program. And what I'm suggesting is, and as I think what Alan says is, you know, if we do want to get this done, trust me, you know, 90 minutes every Monday night at, or every other Monday night at 11 p.m. my time is not how I want to be spending the next 2 years of my life. But, you know, we've got to follow the process here, and we've got to, you know, make sure that we're taking into account the feedback that we've already asked the community for and not just pushing forward and eventually catching back up to it. So, thanks.
Okay, thanks, Jim. Reading All right, before I read the comments, let me just weigh in a little bit, because I have been listening, and we do understand what's being said, and we are trying to meet some timelines and deadlines and things, you know, to try to keep the process moving, and we had to, you know, when we go, we have a leadership meeting every week, the entire leadership team of this PDP, and we discuss all of these details, everything from scheduling, work plan, to, you know, individual comments that are made during calls and what we should do to address those. So we do try to get on the same page with the entire leadership team and balance the needs of the group versus the timeline and what we owe the council. And I should also add that, as Cheryl does, that the council liaisons are on the leadership team calls as well. If they, albeit, you know, not everyone can make every meeting. But one of the, and this is not a complaint at all, because I do appreciate all the feedback we're getting. But what's happened, especially with the private resolution, and this is, again, not to complain. This is not a complaint. But most of the substantive, we went several months discussing these subjects without really much in the way of comments. And the comments that we did get were leaning in one, in completely one direction. 2 weeks ago, that changed with some excellent comments from some individuals. And then because they are coming back to the group or new to the group or whatever it is, because they had other priorities, which completely understand. And then that's kind of built a little bit of a snowball effect in terms of other people weighing in and different options being presented. But what's kind of important to recognize is that at some point we have to stick to our timelines, and there's always going to be really good ideas that come in last minute. We try to hope that they don't come in last minute. And again, they're excellent comments, so it's not a complaint. But we need to kind of stick to a schedule where even comments that come in last minute, we're getting them into the report, but that does mean that we can't have as extensive a discussion on those last minute items as we would have had those comments come in, you know, during the 3 months that we were discussing that subject prior to when those comments came in. So I think at this point, you know, we have to take that into consideration as well. So what I'm going to do as an action item, because I know we're kind of running up towards time, is that on our leadership call this week, we will see what we can do in terms of our options. I think in terms of, you know, if we did release the supplemental initial report or if we released a draft so that people could have that to discuss at the ICANN meeting in Barcelona, then release the final version out, sort of how we did the initial report. My guess is, and just looking at some math and dates, would be that we would push out the supplemental initial report to somewhere around like the 22nd of October, which would mean extending the public comment period from initially November 30th to around December 14th. If we did that, I would just note that we could stay on schedule if we did that. However, there'd be really no room for an extension of the public comment period. So I just want to throw that out there. If people feel like this is a better way to go, to put a draft out there for Barcelona so that people have something to read on the 12th, we'll call it preliminary, and then put out the final supplemental initial report out for comment formally on the 22nd of October, which is a Monday, then with the understanding that any extension to that time period would be at most a week, but certainly not into January. We can't do that, otherwise we really fall way off track, especially with the work that ICANN staff have to do to collate the comments. What do people think about that idea? Alan, please.
Thank you. Clarification. My initial reaction is that sounds reasonable, but then you said issue the report on the Monday of the ICANN meeting. So although we're triggering discussion, none of that discussion can have any relevance or presence in the report. Is that what you're saying? So it may influence the comments we make to it, but it can't alter anything that's in the report itself because it's already issued at that point.
Yeah, sorry, my bad. I meant Monday after the ICANN meeting, so that would be the 29th.
One hell of a busy weekend for you at the end of a long weekend, a week of meetings and staff.
Since our meeting is on the first day on Saturday, hopefully we can work as a leadership team on the final draft during that week.
Jeff, it's Ann. I'm sorry, I'm on the phone. If I could just, if you have a chance to recognize me, I want to support your proposal.
Okay.
Thank
you, Jeff. Yeah, if we're talking about the Monday after the ICANN meeting, having a public comment that we extended for the RDS review team that ends on the Friday after the ICANN meeting, that is adding an extra week for people to actually say things, I'd prefer towards a little bit farther into the week than Monday, but so that would give people a little bit more flexibility, but what you're proposing is far better than what we're talking about now, so I support that. Thank you.
Okay, thanks, Alan. Just to clarify, if it started... Wait a second, I'm getting some different notes here. Sorry, I'm looking at some of the... We're trying to do the math offline, and so I'm getting the text. So
the Monday following the meeting is the 29th.
Right, so if we released it on the 29th and then went 6 weeks later, that is somewhere in December. I'm trying to figure out exactly when. So we would...
That's the 10th of December. 10th of December is 6 weeks.
Okay, so yeah, so then it would close the 10th, and then in theory we could have the discretion to extend it for another week or so. But I'm just waiting for some confirmation of that, as Alan's correct. Okay, Alan, you are correct. So let me restate that. So comment period starts the 29th and would end on the 10th or the 7th or whatever that Monday is. And then that will be 6 weeks. That won't throw off our schedule, but obviously leaves very little time for extension. So it seems like that proposal has some support. So just to restate, we will issue a preliminary draft this Friday, the 12th. We'll discuss that in Barcelona. And especially, really, with Section 1.2 as being the main section. I guess that bleeds into 1.1 as well. But really being the main sections under discussion. And then issue a final supplemental initial report on the on Monday the 29th of October and closing the comment period on December 10th. With the understanding, very little wiggle room at that point to extend. Alan, please.
Thank you. I guess my feeling is if you think that very little wiggle room is a week, I would prefer to delay the issuance, incorporate whatever else you can into it, and make it really clear that the comment period will end on the 17th, and there is no possible chance of delay because of the holiday season. I think would be a better plan, or issue it halfway through the week to give you time to digest things that might come in during the week, even though our meeting's on Saturday. Just a thought. No difference in the end date, but it may make it a better report because of it. That's all. Thank you.
Okay, thanks, Alan.
Something to talk about your leadership meeting.
Yep. We will talk about that. We'll let you know on Wednesday. But the plan I'm proposing, it seems like Cheryl's good with it. And we can say on target is to release it on the preliminary supplemental initial report on the 12th, so that people have a week or so to review before ICANN 63. Discuss it in the first session on Saturday during ICANN 63. The leadership team will then finalize the initial report, incorporating any relevant feedback, including looking at some of the comments if we're able to, especially the boards, this week. To have a final supplemental initial report come out on the 29th of October, comment period ending December 10th. All right. Sounds good. I know we did not get much time to talk about ICANN 63, but briefly in the 2 minutes we have left, there are sessions on Saturday, both for Work Track 5 and for Sub-Pro. They're all on Saturday. Essentially, the morning is up until 1:15 is devoted to Work Track 5. The afternoon, starting at 1:30, is devoted to Work Tracks 1 through 4. The first session will be used to go over the supplemental initial report, which we will pay most attention to at this point on the private resolution of contention sets. The second session will cover what we need to do to get to round two from an implementation perspective and getting thoughts from ICANN staff, GDD in particular, have council members attend to give us their thoughts of things that we need to do from a council perspective. And then the third session will be to break out into the subgroups to talk about the comments that we've gotten back from the initial report and the subdivisions. So that's our plan. We know it clashes, as Cheryl says, with the EPDP. Couldn't avoid it. We know that there's other clashes that some ex-coms of constituencies and leader and supporting organizations and other stakeholder groups have set. Can't do anything about that. We would hope that you would prioritize our sessions and would love to see you all there. But I think this is our last call before the ICANN meeting. So I look forward to seeing everyone in just under 2 weeks. Cheryl, anything, Steve, or ICANN, anything we need to add?
All good for me, other than to wish everyone safe travels for those who are joining us at ICANN 63.
Great. Thanks, Cheryl. Steve, ICANN staff, anything you want to add? Nope, nothing. Great. Well, thank you, everyone. Look forward to seeing you bright and early on Saturday morning of day one of ICANN. Have safe travels and see you all there. Thank you.
Thanks, Jeff. Thanks, everyone.
Bye. Thank you. This concludes today's conference. Please remember to disconnect all lines and have a wonderful rest of your day.